Today is May 29th.
Yeah.
Today's May 29th, and we're at Sherei Tefillah Tuesday night. We're learning Masechet Bava Kama, Chapter 4. We're going to try and learn Mishnayot 6 and 7.
Okay.
I gave
out
the sheets that have 6 on the front and 7 on the back.
Oh, sneaky.
So here we go. It's Perek Dalid Mishnah Vav. And before we read it, let's just remember the context. Let's look at Mishnah Hey, the fifth Mishnah, last week. Not in depth, but just remember what the subject was. So the subject was as follows in Mishnah Hey. Shur shenagach et hadam v'meit, the ox that gored the man and he died. Muad mishulem kofer, if the ox was a muad, then the owner has to pay ransom, which the Beit Din decides how much it is, ransom for the value of the man's life who owns the ox. V'tam patur min hakofer. The tam, of course, is patur min hakofer. It doesn't have to pay kofer. But v'ze v'ze chayvim mitah. This and this, both cases of tam and muad, are chayvim mitah, mitah of the ox. With that, we moved from talking about damages to talking about capital cases, the loss of human life. And then we can understand how we move from there to Mishnah Vav, which is as follows. Shur shaya mitkachech bakotel v'nafal al hadam. The ox that was rubbing against the wall, and it fell on the man. Nitkaven la rog et abeima v'rag et adam, intended to kill the animal and kill the man. La nochri v'rag ben Yisrael, to the Gentile and kill the Jew. La nifilim v'rag ben kaima patur, to nifilim and kill the ben kaima patur. A lot of things to explain. Let me begin by explaining the very end. What is this matter of Nifalim and this matter of Ben Kaima? I don't know how it's translated in English. It doesn't really matter to me. Ben Kaima literally means a son of existence. Ben Kaima, like a ben or a bar mitzvah, son of the mitzvot, means someone who has the mitzvot, who's accomplished that, who's gotten to that stage. A ben kaima is someone who has existence, and it refers to an infant that's considered to be viable. Ben kaima, an infant who can live.
So, like somebody.
Let me
pregnant?
Wait a second. No, an infant,
no,
not a fetus,
born.
Not a fetus,
no.
An infant born.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in contrast to a nifalim. Nifalim, language of nefel, language of nafal, fell.
Fell.
As if to say it fell out of the womb and it's not really ready, it's not viable.
Premature.
A nephel is a premature baby. And measure from the beginning of pregnancy, and if 9 full months haven't passed, we call it a nephel. And a nephel is different from a ben kaima. Ben kaima is a baby that we know went through 9 full months of gestation.
Okay.
So now with all that information, we can now go back and reread the Mishnah and answer some of the questions I asked on the sheet. So we'll read a little bit and look at a question. Read a little bit and ask and answer a question. Sure. I'm back in the Mishnah. Shaya mit chakech bakotel. An ox who is rubbing against a wall, and the literature tells us that oxen like to rub against walls. It gives them pleasure. V'nafal al adam, and fell on the man. Now the question is, what fell?
The wall
fell on the man. The ox was rubbing on one side of it, the other side of it was a man, and the wall fell down, and what happened to the man, it doesn't say. But we can assume from the rest of the Mishnah that uses the word harag, 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 we can assume the man died. So there's a case of an ox killing someone, and the ox probably didn't even know that it killed someone who's on the other side of the wall. But that's what happened. The ox killed someone. Is it a tam? Is it a muad? Doesn't say. And then it says, nitkaven larog et beima varag et adam. intended to kill the animal and kill the Adam. What we have to understand is that this is a second case, and it is using some of the words of the first case. In other words, some of the words of the first case apply not only to the first case, but also to the second case. Some of those words are actually a kuteret, they're a heading. Which words from the first case apply also to the second case?
I mean, it seems to be the only one.
Which word did you say? You said nitchakech?
I mean, that seems to be the only thing that would... What else is there to transfer over? Adam is what happened after he rubbed on the wall.
Who says he rubbed on the wall?
On the first one.
In the first one he rubbed on the wall. In the second one, did he rub on the wall?
No.
He intended
to kill another, or to fight another animal.
And who is the who? Is the he?
The ox.
The ox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the word that I meant is the ox, the shore.
Yeah.
Well,
right,
yeah,
okay.
Sure. But this is giving an awful lot of I mean, giving the concept that an ox would intend.
Oh, no, wait. This is the kind where the two animals are like squaring off, and a person's just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Could be.
Well, definitely
where
could
the animal's attacking another animal, probably another ox, and the person grabs it on the other ox.
I understand that, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that the intention of the ox of the shore was to kill the other animal, as opposed to perhaps to chase it off.
Well, could it?
But that's what it says. Right. The Mishnah says, "Nitkaven laharog et habeima."
Yeah.
So it has to be a scenario in which we see that the ox intended to kill the other ox, but by mistake, like Tom said,
person got in the way.
So the word and a half at the beginning of the Mishnah, shor she. There's two cases. Shor she. The first case is haya mit chakech bakotel v'nafal al adam. The second is that the shor she nitkaven larog et beima v'arag et adam. That's the word and a half at the beginning of the Mishnah apply also to the second case.
But now we're going to carry over the nitkaven larog.
Right, right. The third case, lenochri v'arag ben Yisrael. So like Jan just said, that assumes the words shor shehaya mitkaven larog et.
We have different texts. We have Oved Kochavim.
You have Oved Kochavim.
What is Oved? Oved
Kochavim is a worshipper of stars.
Oh, okay.
But probably the more proper text is simply Nochri, a foreigner, a Gentile. But it means the same thing.
Okay.
So this Mishnah is organized in a very, very interesting fashion. I should say it's written, because just like Jan said, now in the third case, it's using from the first case the words nitkaven larog et. Okay? And the same thing is true for the fourth case. The fourth case that begins lanifilim, it means shor she nitkaven la'arog et hanifilim. Mary Beth, are you?
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So that shows you how the Mishnah saves words, saves space, saves ink. Now, what we did is we answered questions 1, 2, and 3, and now it's easy to answer question 4. Question 4 is, to which cases does the ruling of Patur apply to?
All three.
All of them. Right.
All of them.
Yeah. Right. Next question. Patur from what consequences? Patur from what?
Well, killing the ox.
Killing the ox. Anything else?
Well, I guess anybody that owned the ox, an
any payment they would have to
what
make.
What about, you know, kofar?
Okay, very good. And whether the ox is a tam or a muad, when an ox kills a human being, it has to be subject to skila, to stoning. Now we're being told, patur. It's certainly talking about that. Patur from stoning. Furthermore, if it's a muad, then the owner would be subject to kofar.
Mm-hmm. What's kofar again?
Ransom. Okay. Payment. And it could very well be that we're being told that patur completely from stoning the ox, and if it's a muad, from paying kofar. Of course, if it's a tam, then there's no issue of kofar. Then it's only stoning the ox.
Because, I mean, that's completely unintentional.
Completely unintentional.
I mean, if the ox is rubbing against a wall and something happens on the other side of the wall.
Mm-hmm. All animals like to rub against rough things. But I mean, cats do it all the time.
Cats, right? We've all seen that.
Yeah.
Well, they rub up against the wall, probably to
scratch
their fur and rub loose fur off as the fur shed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never asked them why they do it.
Well, they do it.
But apparently they do it.
They do it. Mm-hmm.
So, now, the next question was, what is the common denominator of all four cases?
Intent.
The victim was not the intended victim.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? The victim was not the intended victim. But, there might be something more than that. Because if it was just that the victim wasn't the intended victim...
Oh, that the intended victim was one that where it was patur.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mary Beth didn't hear what you said, I think.
The intended victim is one where it was patur.
Right. It was one that would be where they wouldn't... In other words, if the ox killed another ox, they wouldn't stone the ox.
Okay.
And if that was the intent, was to kill this other ox.
Or if it killed a non-Jew.
Yeah.
Or killed a premature baby.
If it's a premature child, that's fine.
Yeah.
I didn't say fine.
Well, it sounds like it.
No, it's not fine. It's just that it's not punishable by skila, as we'll talk in a few minutes.
Because Nephilim wouldn't expect to live.
Right. Just like I mentioned in the past, the case of killing a trefa, mm-hmm. a person who's expected to die mm-hmm. of a disease within 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you're allowed to kill such people. Mm-hmm. It's just that if you do, there's no death penalty. It's still a serious crime.
In our English translation here, it says, if it intended to kill a child of
untimely birth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a premature baby. So it's okay for an ox to intend to kill a premature baby.
No, not that it's okay. But if he did it, then there's no death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Don't go training your ox to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the implication of this Mishnah is that if an ox intended to kill Mary Beth, mm-hmm. and by mistake it killed me,
mm-hmm.
then what's the law?
Oh, stone the ox.
Stone the ox.
Yeah.
Because,
right?
because you're both Jews.
Right. Because if it intended to kill someone for whom it would be stoned, then if in that act it mistakenly kills someone else, then we stone it. It's only when it intended to kill someone or something for which there is no death penalty and accidentally killed someone for which there is a death penalty that it's not stoned. Mm-hmm. So that's the principle.
Okay.
Right, that's the principle. And the ox has to intend to do an act of murder that would get it stoned for it to get stoned.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds better.
Mm-hmm. And look at the Mishnah. That's exactly what the Mishnah is telling us. Right. Now, in the case of the rubbing against the wall, it didn't intend at all. So, of course it's patur. But even it's patur if it intended to kill, as long as it intended to kill someone or something for which there's not the death penalty, then it doesn't get the death penalty, even if it killed someone for which there is a death penalty. So that's the principle that the Mishnah is coming to illustrate.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have a few sources to see about this. Let's see them. The first one is from the Gemara, the Talmud on the Mishnah. And it says, Gemara, and if we see that word there, we mean that this is exactly at the end of the Mishnah, the beginning of the Gemara. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel is a first generation Amora of Babylonia. So it's about the year 200, give or take two or three decades. Patur mimita v'chayav b'kofer. You see what he's saying?
Okay. So you don't kill him, but give ransom.
So he's saying that if it would be a muad, the fact that the Mishnah says patur is only patur mimita, but if it's a muad, it would actually have to pay kofer. V'rav amar, Rav lives at the same time, same place, patur mizeh umizeh, exempt from this and that, both from mita and from kofer. Ve'amai, the Gemara says, and why? Ha'tamhu, behold, it's a tam. That is, the Mishnah didn't say that it's a muad, so it must be a tam, or at least it must be a tam. And the Gemara says, Kida'amar Rav, as Rav said, B'mu'ad lipol al b'nei adam b'borot hachanami b'mu'ad lehit chakech al b'nei adam b'ktalim. So it says, just like Rav said in a different place, an animal that is mu'ad to fall on human beings in pits. Hachanami, so here, that it's mu'ad to rub on people, on walls. In other words, to rub on walls and for the walls to fall on people. In other words, the point is, it could be mu'ad. In theory, there could be a mu'ad of such a case. And Rav says, if it was a mu'ad, then it would have to pay kofar. Now, the Gemara goes on for another whole page.
Does that mean that it's rubbed up against other walls and knocked them down?
Right.
Yeah.
And killed people.
And killed people.
Yeah.
Or what if it did other things and killed people, but in this case it was just rubbing against a wall?
Well, but would it have to be for the same type of manner of causing death that it would have to be muad?
Remember, we talked in the past of animals that are muad for killing animals, not for people, animals that are muad for killing Gentiles, not for Jews. In other words, there is in the halakha a very, very specificity in muadut.
And why is that? Is that to make it harder to say an animal is muad?
In point of fact, it certainly does make it harder.
Yeah.
And we talked about the fact that
sure,
the ox is right, and the rabbis want to keep commerce alive.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that there's a problem with the wall, not with the ox.
Yeah, what about that?
So this is an ox is attracted to weak walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, it does seem like the rabbis are pushing for the least possible government interference.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Republican Mishnah. But I wanted to ask the principal, talk about the principal.
Mm-hmm.
What would we think in principle when we say that the ox is exempt from the death penalty? Does it also apply to exemption from kofar if the ox were to be a muad?
That was the question.
Do we think that those two things go together, death penalty and kofar, or do we think that they are separate and they could be separated? Let's just think that out.
Well, the kofar is brought on when you kill a person, right?
When you kill a person, you mean
when an ox kills a person?
We're only talking about an ox kills a person.
Right.
We're only talking about that.
So that was in the previous.
The previous Mishnah talked about that.
Yeah.
And this Mishnah is also about an ox killing a person.
Right.
And all these oxen, since they didn't intend to kill someone for whom killing him would bring the death penalty, therefore, there's no death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the kofar was in the last Mishnah.
We discussed their kofar.
On these situations, what would Moad or Tom have to do with anything if it is rubbing against a wall?
So you know what, leave that out.
Okay.
Let's say that it's the case of intended to kill an animal and killed a man.
Oh, okay.
Or intended to kill a Nochri and killed a Yisrael. So the animal's a Muad.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a situation, let's say it's a Muad, and it is exempt from the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Should we consider the possibility that the owner will have to pay kofar if the animal is exempt from the death penalty? Does it make sense to be exempt from the death penalty but to have to pay kofar?
No, because I thought you paid the kofar if you murdered a person.
If there was such a way that there was a death penalty.
Right. The way you said it is not good, but what you mean is good. Mm-hmm. In other words, kofar is essentially because the human being is considered to be a murderer. By having this ox that kills around and not guarding it, mm-hmm. then he owes his life. He's culpable for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the kofar is, in some sense, a ransom for his life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Mary Beth is saying, if the ox isn't to be stoned, because these are cases in which you can't pin culpability for execution on the ox, then how could you tell the owner that he's liable for kofar? Because essentially there's no death penalty here. There mm-hmm. couldn't be, and that makes a lot of sense what Mary Beth is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say differently?
Well, if we look at Mishnah Hay,
mm-hmm.
whether the shor is Muad or Tam, the Mishnah says that we have to kill the ox.
That's the Torah. The Torah says, right?
Right. But if the kofar only applies if this shor is Muad. So if we have a case where we don't kill the ox, then why, if we're not even going to kill the ox, as we did in Mishnah Hay, then why would we impose kofar?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what Mary Beth is saying.
Yeah.
But let's see,
kofar,
perhaps there is a reason to impose kofar.
We had to deal with the Torah quote on that one, on number 5. Whereas we don't have that on the situation of number 6.
What don't we have?
That there's
an ox gored a man.
Yeah, whereas before, where the ox gored a man and he died,
mm-hmm.
that there we were dealing with the quote from the Torah.
Yeah.
And so we had to deal with some way of letting the person pay ransom to, I mean, but in the number 6, this situation doesn't occur in the Torah. So
yeah.
So we don't have. It doesn't mention the whether there be kofar or anything in this Mishnah. This Mishnah is just talking about whether the ox is going to die. So it seems like it's not raising the question.
But didn't we have indirect kofar?
Wait a second. You're assuming what you want to prove.
Yeah.
You're assuming that we're not talking about kofar, but how do you know? The Mishnah just says patur. It doesn't say patur from what?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question for patur from what?
But the fact that it doesn't mention kofar.
That's right. I was going to say the fact that it doesn't mention kofar.
Okay, that could be a point. Yeah. It doesn't mention it, so we assume it's patur from everything. Mm-hmm. But let me try something else. Could it be? I'm not sure. No, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, aren't there other cases that we've studied when people were culpable for indirect actions of their animals?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, if you mean culpable, you mean for the death penalty?
Well, no, for penalty. They were penalized.
They paid Mezek Shalem.
They paid something.
Depending on the
but you can't always compare torts with the capital cases. But let me try something here. The ox killed a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not stoned for a reason that we could call a technicality.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the lack of intention to kill someone for whom there's a death penalty. But it did kill someone for whom there's a death penalty. It just didn't do it on purpose.
It's more of a manslaughter than a homicide. Because it was an accidental death.
No, it wasn't accidental.
The victim was...
Yeah, for this particular victim.
This particular victim was accidental.
But at least in most of the cases, the ox intended to kill. Just intended to kill someone else.
Well, the ox, the rubbing up against the wall, wasn't intended to kill.
Okay, that case aside. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we could say that the ox gets off the hook on a technicality. Mm-hmm. But the owner of the ox still was negligent in not watching his ox. This is an ox. If it's a muad, then a fourth time now, this ox is going and it's doing an act that's killing someone, and in most of the cases, this ox actually intended to kill. So perhaps we could say that since the ox intended to kill
something or somebody,
something or somebody, and the owner is clearly there negligent for not watching his muad, perhaps the owner should have to pay kofar. The ox gets off the hook for a technicality. But as far as the responsibility of the owner, I would say the responsibility is there. As far as the responsibility of the owner goes, it doesn't matter if the ox intended to kill X and killed Y. The ox was loose. The owner didn't watch it. So perhaps it does have to pay kofar. Perhaps that's the way to explain how it is that Rav says, that Shmuel says he does have to pay kofar. I'm just going to try that. Again, the halakha here, there's a machloket between Rav and Shmuel. Both possibilities are possible.
Well, I was going to say, in one sense, I can see the Shmuel's why he would do that for other purposes, in the sense that it would provide some sustenance for the heirs when they lose. I mean, we're assuming that the heirs are losing the person that's doing the work may not be true, but they lose the value of that person.
I hear, but remember, we're not supposed to be talking
about a value of a person.
About those values.
Right, we're supposed to be talking about the culpability of the owner. The kofar is
for culpability.
His soul. It's not recompense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's see some of the other sources that I brought. This Mishnah from Sanhedrin, perhaps I should have brought it early before we had this whole discussion. In Tractate Sanhedrin, Perek Tet Mishnah Aleph and Mishnah Bet, it says, Elu hen haneheragim. These are those who are executed. Nehargin are killed by the court. And it gives a long list. And in the list is Harotseach, the murderer. And I didn't print lots and lots of cases of murderers until it says Nitkaven la rogeta behima varageta adam lenochri. In other words, he intended to kill the nochri vaharag et Yisrael lenefilim. In other words, intended to kill the nefilim varag et ben kaima patur.
So,
this is a quote.
How does that
Mishnah
fit in with the being executed by the court?
Who? This is an exception. This is a murderer that's not executed.
If he plans to kill a premature child, but he
by mistake kills me.
Yeah.
Right. So as we notice, it's the exact same language as our Mishnah, but the case is very different. What's very different? What distinguishes between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Sanhedrin?
Well, this isn't a shor, this is a dam.
In Sanhedrin, it's talking about a human being that intends X but mistakenly does Y. Whereas in our Mishnah, it's an ox.
Ah, yes.
So exactly the same thing.
If Adam does this and we're patur,
Then all the more so
when the shor does it.
You know, I'm not sure it's an all the more so, actually. But it's certainly a comparison.
Yeah.
In other words, what this goes to show you is that the rabbis are applying the laws of the execution of a human criminal to an ox.
So this came before.
Well, but this would say...
I would say that at least conceptually, the laws of the human being came before the laws of the ox conceptually.
But this says that you don't kill the ox.
Right.
We still haven't... Does this specifically... Does this then mean that the owner doesn't have to pay kofar?
I don't know. We talked about
that
earlier.
Well, what if the ox means to kill a viable child, but he accidentally kills a premature child?
Then of course he's not culpable of the death penalty. Because in the end he killed someone who, if he had intended to kill him, he wouldn't have been culpable. Because as you see in the Mishnah about human beings, if you intend to kill a premature and you kill a viable one, you're not culpable. Why? Because had you intended to kill the premature and killed him, you wouldn't be culpable. Really? Again, that doesn't mean you're allowed to go around killing premature babies. No one is suggesting that.
I don't even know why this is in here. This is crazy.
Okay, I'm happy to have a discussion.
Well, I mean, why?
I'll tell you why. Because human life is precious, and the rabbis are limiting the cases of capital punishment. And one of the ways they're limiting it is saying that you are only culpable of the death penalty when you kill a human being who is alive in the fullest sense of the word. Mm-hmm. If you kill a premature child who doesn't have a chazakah that he's going to live, so since he was going to die anyway, if you killed him, not that it's a good idea, not that you're allowed, but if you killed him,
no death penalty.
It's not capital.
Capital penalty.
And so then we have to deal with the case of the non-Jew. So this says if you kill a non-Jew, no one said it's a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't say that. But if you kill a non-Jew, this says you're not culpable of the death penalty. And therefore, if you kill a Jew when you intended to kill a non-Jew, you're not culpable of the death penalty because your intention wasn't to commit a crime that's culpable of the death penalty. You have to intend to commit a crime that would make you culpable of the death penalty in order to get the death penalty. Mm-hmm. The rabbis are limiting the death penalty. We'll talk about this a little bit more. Don't worry, it's not the end of it. But in any case, I just wanted to point out what we said earlier before we go on, that the rabbis are transferring the laws of human murderers to the laws of oxen who murder. That is fascinating. I'm sure there's been those who've thought about it deeply. I haven't. Must be articles about it. There's a personification of the murdering shur here. That's he's treated like a human being.
Like a human.
And actually, the rabbi's point, we bring him to court, we put him in the dock, and we bring witnesses against him.
Well, all along they've been talking about the intention of the shore. I mean, that's a factor in it.
Yeah, and they're talking about it just like they were, as if he were an Adam.
He's a human.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. This probably came first.
Yeah.
Because of the intention of the human.
So I'm sure someone has written a doctorate about it, or written a paper someplace. Why the rabbis insisted on this personification of the murderous shore. Anyway, we're going to go on within this Mishnah. I think we should see now chapter 21 of Exodus, verses 12 to 14, in order to see the Mechilta that I brought right coming down on the sheet. So we're looking at Shmot 21:12. Oh, sorry.
I'm
here.
One of those.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
I didn't open to the right place. I was in the process of opening.
Oh, okay.
So.
So we're in chapter 21 of Exodus. This is our Parshat Mishpatim that we've been looking at for quite a while. And we're in verse 12. Top of page 420 and 421. In Hebrew it says, verse 12, top line, Makeh ish v'met mot yumat. Right, one who strikes a man so that he dies, shall surely die. Vasher lo tsada. But if one is not laid in ambush, velokim inaliado, and God caused him to come to his hand, in other words, an accidental death, v'samti lecha mokom asher yanu shama, and I'll provide you a place to which he shall flee, that is the cities of refuge. V'chi yazid ish al re'ehu lehorgo be'orma, and if a man will plot against his fellow to kill him be'orma, with guile, right, with intention, then me'im mizbechi tekachenu lamut, take him from my altar to die. And that refers to the ancient custom of understanding, of relating to the temple or the tabernacle as a sanctuary. That's why we call it a sanctuary. It's a sanctuary. If you take hold of the horns of the altar, you have sanctuary. You can't be taken, according to except Middle Eastern law. But the Torah says no, there is no sanctuary. The Torah says don't call it a sanctuary, because it's not. There's no sanctuary from law, from justice. Now, with that information, we go to the Mechilta that I brought on the sheet in D and then in E. So first is the Mechilta, Rabbi Yishmael. So the Mechilta is the Tana'itic, Halachic, Midrash on the book of Shmot, and there's two of them. One is the Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael, the other is the Mechilta de Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Two different Mechiltot from different Bate Midrash. And what I brought here are the two different Mechiltot on this verse 14. And the Dibur Matril, the opening phrase from the verse is, V'chi yazid ish, if a man will plot against his fellow. Right, that's the way the English has it, if a man will act intentionally against his fellow, in the art scroll. So the Mechilta says that the word re'ehu is lahavi et akatan. Lahavi literally means to bring, whereas in technical language it means to include. The fact that the Torah says that you're here plotting against re'ehu, your fellow, that includes even a katan.
Includes you being a katan?
No. The re'ehu. The person you are planning against.
The victim. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the Midrash repeats the word re'ehu to tell you that it is lehotzi et achirim. It comes to include others. Others is a code word for Gentiles. In other words, what the Midrash is saying is that the Torah did not say that if you intentionally plot against a human being, you should be punished. It says if you intentionally plot against a rea, a fellow.
Yeah.
And the rabbis understand that is not all human beings. It's a human being who is a fellow in some sense. In what sense is he a fellow? Is it that someone who's the same neighborhood as you, the same skin color as you? No, the rabbis say it's someone who's, to use the words in another place, re'ehu b'torah mitzvot, someone who is your fellow in Torah and mitzvot. In other words, it's in the same level of commandedness.
Okay, so you can kill a younger person?
You can kill someone. Oh, you mean a katan?
A
katan. Yes. A katan, I guess, is potentially obligate in Torah mitzvot.
Yeah.
But a Gentile is not ever like you in Torah mitzvot.
Okay, so the katan is not excluded.
Is not excluded.
You can't kill.
But the re'ehu excludes the achirim, according to this midrash.
Okay.
And then it says, Isi ben Akiva Omer, Kodem Matan Torah, Hainu Muzharim al Shpichut Damim, Lachar Matan Torah Tachat Shehuch Maru Huklu. Translation: before Matan Torah, before the giving of the Torah, we were warned against bloodshed. After the giving of the Torah, in place of it becoming more severe, it became more lenient. Right, it says, mm-hmm. I think it's chapter 9 of Genesis, mm-hmm. that Shofech Dam Ha'adam Damu Yishafech. He who spills the blood of Adam, of a human being, mm-hmm. his blood shall be shed. In other words, capital punishment for killing a human being. Mm-hmm. So, had this been before Matan Torah, I would be culpable of the death penalty if I killed a Gentile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But now the Torah was given, you're telling me I'm no longer culpable? In other words, the Torah made life easier, made law less severe? How could that be? Says Isi ben Akiva. How could it be? It doesn't make any sense, because we have a principle that the Torah comes to make law more strict, not to make it more lenient. So how could it be that suddenly there's no death penalty when I kill someone, or if I killed him before the Torah, I would have had a death penalty? Mm-hmm. That's his question, which obviously is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer the Midrash gives is Bemet Amru Patur Midei Ne Basar Vadam Vidino Masur Lashamayim. Really, they said, exempt from the laws of flesh and blood, but his judgment is given to heaven. In other words, of course it's forbidden to kill a Gentile. And of course there's a death penalty involved. But rather, for technicality, the courts do not enforce that death penalty. But the death penalty is still there, and you'll get it from God. That's what the Midrash is saying. Now, of course, that doesn't answer the question, but why is there this technicality that we don't execute the Jew who kills a Gentile? That question is not answered. But the question in principle, how could there be any difference between the value of the life of a Jew and the value of the life of a non-Jew? So the answer is there is no difference. There is no difference. If you thought that the halakha meant to make a difference, then you made a mistake. That's what it says. By the way, last week we did see one word of the Rambam that told us why there's this technicality. Why a Jew kills a non-Jew is not executed by the court. And the Rambam used one word. Kidinehem. Like their laws.
Oh, right.
It's reciprocity. The Rambam's claiming, since if one of them killed one of us,
they wouldn't
execute their own, so we won't execute one of ours.
Right.
And that really fits in with this Midrash. That's a matter there of politics. It's not a matter of the essential value of human life. Anyway, there's obviously a lot to discuss here, and you can imagine there's lots of articles written on this and lots of polemics and lots of apologetics and lots of hand wringing. Yeah.
Beard wringing.
Right. But that's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see what the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says on the same verse. V'chi yazid ish al reyehu, al reyehu prat la'achirim. Same thing. Al reyehu prat means with the exception of, or to exclude, achirim, to exclude non-Jews. It's the same halakha. And then it says, reyehu prat l'ger toshav. The word also excludes a ger toshav. A ger toshav is a Gentile who's taken upon himself to do the 7 mitzvot b'nei Noach and is accepted as a partially naturalized citizen into the state of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. So if you kill one of them, you're also not culpable in a human court for the death penalty. And then the Midrash says, Motzi ani et achirim she'ein lehem mitzvot ki Yisrael, Ada'an lo utzi et ger toshav sheyesh lo mitzvot ki Yisrael. translation, Mutziani, I exclude the Achirim, the Gentiles, because Ein lehem mitzvot k'Yisrael, because they don't have mitzvot like Yisrael. They don't keep mitzvot. The Ada'an means Adayin. Still, Lo Otsi, I will not exclude the Ger Toshav, Sheyesh lo mitzvot k'Yisrael. He's someone who keeps mitzvot. He only keeps the seven, but he keeps mitzvot. So in other words, it's saying, you claim that Reyo excludes the Ger Toshav, but I think he should be included, because he's just like a Yisrael. He does his mitzvot just like we do our mitzvot. Why should the court not punish someone who kills him? Talmud Lomar, Reyehu, Prat Leger Toshav. Comes the verse and says, Reyehu, to exclude Ger Toshav. In other words, what it's saying is, the logic would be that I'd have a death penalty for killing the Atosha, but what can I do? The verse excludes it.
Okay.
That's what the Midrash says. By the way, we should have a camera recording all of Mary Beth's facial expressions.
Well, you know, you never know, though, when one of these rabbis says some one of these things, if the other rabbi is not rolling his eyes or something.
Oh, I'm
you
sure
don't
that's
know.
Times that they did.
You don't know.
That's true.
I'm sure that there were times that they were sitting around drinking saying, I can tell your story.
And then it quotes the rest of the verse, Lehorgo Boorma, to kill him with guile. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. This is, you intended to kill with guile. And it says something that's going to be interesting to us. Prat Lemitkaven Larog etze Varag etze Sheiftor Divrei Rabbi Shemaya. Because the verse said that you intended to kill with guile, prat, to exclude someone who intends to kill this and kills this, that he's exempt. Those are the words of Rabbi Yishmael. It's according to Rabbi Shemaya. Rabbi Shemaya says that according to the verse, you have to kill the person you intended to kill. You have to have guile and you have to have malice towards that person. And if you killed someone who you didn't intend to kill, you're exempt. That's what Rabbi Shemaya says. But Rabbi Yehuda says differently. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af hamitkaven larog et ze varag et ze chayav. Even he who intends to kill this and kills that is chayav. Ma tamud lomar lehorgo borma. So what is the verse teaching when it says lehorgo borma, to kill him with guile? Prat lemitkaven lamit et agoy vimit et ben Yisrael. Et ben shmona vimit et ben tisha. To exclude where he intended to kill the goy and kill the Yisrael, or intended to kill the baby born after 8 months and kill the baby born after 9 months. So this actually brings us back to our Mishnah. So the verse says that you're only culpable of the death penalty if you kill Bo'orma with guile. Mm-hmm. Now what does that mean? One opinion says it has to be guile, malice towards the person that you killed.
Victim.
That's Rabbi Shemaya. Mm-hmm. But that's not reflected in our Mishnah. What's reflected in our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, no, we don't learn from that word guile that you have to kill the person you intended to kill. We only learn from that word you have to kill someone, you have to intend to kill someone who, had you got him, you would have had the death penalty. But if you kill the person you didn't intend to kill, as long as the person you intend to kill would have brought with his death the death penalty, then you are culpable of the death penalty.
As long as the person you intended to
kill would have been someone, had you killed them, you would have gotten the death penalty for it.
So even then, if you kill
someone that you didn't,
you still
get the death penalty. And that's what our Mishnah reflects. Our Mishnah in Baba Kama concerning the murderous ox, and the Mishnah in Sanhedrin concerning the murderous person, as long as you intended to kill a viable Jew, even if you intend, if you ended up killing a different viable Jew, that's enough That's enough malice. That's enough orma. Whereas Rabbi Shammai is even more restricted with the death penalty. He says you have to kill the person you intended to kill.
So if it intended to kill a Jew, but it killed a Gentile,
then it's certainly patur. But even the opposite, intended to kill a Gentile and killed a Jew. Patur, according to everyone. And according to Rabbi Shammaya, you're patur even if you intended to kill a Jew and killed a different Jew.
Because you didn't kill the one you intended to kill.
Because you didn't kill the one you intended to kill. But again, our Mishnah does not reflect Rabbi Shammaya, it reflects Rabbi Yehuda. That's the story of that. Any questions before we go on? No questions.
I was going to say, this somehow sounds like something, a good plot for an Agatha Christie thing, where, you know, who did you really intend to kill?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, intention carries a lot of weight here.
It does.
Yes.
That's right.
Because if your victim was not the intended victim, then what you have is something akin to an accidental death.
Yeah. But what it says is, I mean, how do you determine intent?
Ah.
Yeah.
Is there an objective way of determining intent, or is it the word of the person that did the killing?
And how do you determine the ox's intent?
Oh, yeah.
I would say that it's easier.
It may be easier with the ox, because you can see who is aiming, what the ox is aiming at, and then somebody or something causes the ox to go off course or gets in the way.
Right. Yeah.
A child runs out.
Right. Right. So I would think that the end result of all of these laws is to make the death penalty less and less realistic.
Well, we see that.
Less and less practiced.
Less and less, yes.
Yeah. It just goes away.
Because you could never, almost never, prove the intention of the killer.
And we see throughout Sanhedrin that the rabbis did not like the death penalty.
Right. Right. Certainly true. Certainly true.
And we know from real life experience in Texas and in other states that
they're wrong.
They're wrong many times.
Right.
So you can't. There's still this issue of, have I got the right perpetrator here?
Yeah, we've learned that eyewitness account.
Intent aside.
Oh, yeah.
The question is, is it even the right perpetrator, let alone what was the intent?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we have a few minutes for the next Mishnah.
Okay.
We might not get that far in the next Mishnah, but we can start. So the next Mishnah is Mishnah 7, Mishnah Zayin. And it says as follows. You ready?
Yes.
Shur Ha'isha.
Ooh.
Shur Hayitomim. Shur Apitropos. Shur Hamidbar. Shur Hekdesh. Shur Hager. Shemit Vein Lo Yorshim. Hare Elu Hayavim Mita. So, translation. Shur Haisha means the ox of a woman. An ox that belongs to a member of the female species. Shur Hayitomim. Ox of the orphans, and now the implication is these are orphans who are minors.
Minors,
right. Shur apitropos, the shur that's under the watchful supervision of an apitropos, which means that it's the ox of yitomim who are minors who've had an apitropos appointed for them. Whereas the previous case, shur yitumim, are yitumim who are minors who have not had an apitropos appointed for them. Shur hamidbar, the ox of the desert, means an ox that no one is watching, an ox that is hefker, it's not owned by anyone. Shura Hekdesh, ox owned by the temple. Or someone donated it to the temple. And then Shur Hager, Shemet Ve'in Lo Yorshim, the ox of a convert who died and he doesn't have any Yorshim, doesn't have any inheritors, any heirs. So you might ask, if we want to talk about an ox that's owned by someone who died and no one inherits the ox, why specifically a convert?
Yeah.
Well, but
anybody.
I was going to ask that.
You were going to ask that. Why?
But wait a minute. Wouldn't the relatives of this ger, if they have not converted, they would have a different... Do they have a different status than a Jewish relative of the ger?
Right.
So everybody except this person would have relatives.
Right. The theory is that every Jew has relatives. They might be very distant, but he has relatives. He'll find relatives somewhere. Whereas a ger has the category of ketinok shenolad dami. He's like a newborn. He doesn't have any relatives except for his progeny. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't have progeny, then he doesn't or she doesn't have any relatives. So that's why the particular case of the ger is highlighted. Because there you can have really reality that the person dies and his oxen are wandering on the city and they don't belong to anyone. Mm-hmm. So in all these cases, and I believe it was 7 cases, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's 6 cases, sorry. 6 cases. Hare elu haivim mita. Behold, they are all culpable of death. Now you might say, wait a second. Just because an ox is owned by a woman, it's culpable of death? No, it means if it gored.
If it gored,
right?
Yeah.
I have to make that clear.
That's right. It's not just because of it who owned it. Yeah.
Right? So
we're talking here about an ox that's killed, that has killed...
Before?
Its victim. No, I mean that even if it's the first time, but the case is...
Killed
the
its victim.
The victim of this ox has died.
The victim of the ox dies... And the ox is to be killed. Now you might say to that pshita, of course, why not? Just like anyone else's ox.
Well, but what happened to intent? Was it the intended victim that got killed?
Well, this assumes that it did something for which there would be a death penalty.
Yeah.
And what about an ox who just simply belongs to a Jew?
So apparently the point is that for some reason you would have thought that these cases are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that if an ox that belongs to a Jew intends to kill a Jew and kills a Jew, the ox is to be stoned.
Right.
But for some reason you would have thought that if the ox is owned by an Isha, the law is different. Mm-hmm. You would have thought if the ox is owned by Yitumim, the law is different. If the ox is owned or watched by the Apotropos, the law is different. You would have thought. And therefore, the Mishnah will tell you it's not different.
With respect to the death penalty.
With respect to the death penalty.
What about with respect to the...
Same thing, I suppose. To kofar.
To kofar.
If
orphans have to pay kofar?
Say it again?
Orphans have to pay kofar?
I assume orphans have to pay kofar and women have to pay kofar. Now, of course, in the case of a shura midbar, if it's not owned by anyone, then obviously there's no kofar.
No kofar.
There's no one to pay kofar. So we can ask ourselves...
Temple?
Say it again?
The temple?
We learn anything about this already? I don't know.
Oh, the ox of the temple?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't know.
So let's just end with the matter of the Isha.
Okay.
And the question is, why would we have thought that a woman whose ox gores and kills, why would we have thought that the ox does not have to be stoned? The halakha is, does have to be stoned. But we'd have thought that it doesn't. Why not? Why does the Mishnah have to single it out? Anyone have any ideas?
What does the Torah say?
Okay, that's a good, very good point. Does the Torah say anything? So we go to the Torah.
Mm-hmm. And it says, it probably talks about Ish.
Very good.
Oh, so not Isha.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look, for example, at verse 28, Kafchet, it says, V'chi yigach shor et ish o et isha. If an ox will gore a man or a woman. So there it specifically says man or woman.
But that's the victim.
That's the victim, right.
Yeah.
And then we read on, and we get to verse 35. Lamite. V'chi yigof shor ish et shoriyehu. If the ox of an ish gores the ox of a reyu. So here might be the source. And this, because it says it belongs to an ish, you might think that comes to exclude the ox that belongs to a isha. Therefore, the Mishnah has to tell you that the word ish does not exclude. And what we just saw is Tosfot's opinion. So let's read Tosfot's opinion on the sheet.
We said fellow excludes. If he
fellow excludes, we said excludes a non-Jew. But it also doesn't exclude a woman.
Right.
And now we're saying that ish doesn't exclude a woman, but it's rather a generic term that can include ish or isha. Although early we saw that the word ish does exclude because it had to say ish or isha. So you see that word ish is very, very fluid. So anyway, let's look on the sheet I prepared. On Mishnah 7, and in the second half of the sheet, I brought Rashi, Tosfot, and the Beit HaBechira L'Rabbeinu HaMe'iri on this question of Shur Isha. So first Rashi says, Shur Isha, Mary Beth, do you see the place?
Yes.
It says, Delotema Bal Hashur Kativ Lashon Zachar. Rashi says that you shouldn't say the master of the shore, it is written, and that is the language of masculine. In other words, the Torah says that Baal HaShur has to pay, the owner of the shore. And that word Baal also means husband. So you could have thought perhaps that owner of the ox implies a male. But it comes to teach you, it doesn't imply that. But then Tosfot comes and says, Rashi, that's crazy. No one would ever think that the word Baal implies male. Why would you think that? So therefore, Tosfot says what Tim just said. I'm sorry, what Tom just said. So we're going to read the Tosfot. Tosfot says, Shur Haisha. See the place? Itzterich li'ituye. It's needed to include. Li'ituye means to bring, to include, or to specifically tell you that the ox of woman is included. Mishum damar le'el, because it said above, ki gach nigicha lemita nigicha lenezikin. Because we learned on the previous page, when it says an abbreviation there, ayin aleph, it means amud aleph. It was the earlier folio. It said that when will gore for killing and goring for damaging are equated. As we learn the laws of damaging from killing and killing from damages, I'll explain. And then it says, last two words of Tosfot on that line, "Ubenizikin kativ ishtafka." And in nizikin, in other words, in damaging, it used the word ish. Ki yigof shor ish. When will gore the ox of an ish? So since concerning goring an ox, not a human being, it says an ox that belongs to a man, and since we equate the laws of goring oxen to the laws of killing people, well therefore, since it says the ox that belongs to an ish concerning goring oxen, we can apply that also to killing people, and that brings us to where we were, that look, it says ish. So you might have thought that comes to exclude isha. Lechach itzterich ribui. Therefore, we need a ribui. Therefore, we need an inclusion. We need the Mishnah to tell us even the ox that belongs to a woman. And we'll end with the Me'iri, who always tries to bring logic, straightforward logic, straightforward common sense into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Meiri says, Amar HaMeiri, Shur Haisha, Afal Pi, She'ein Data Mechuvan Kokach, Lishmor Et Shala, Shelo Lazik, Im Himit Chayab Mita. Translation. Says the Meiri, the ox of a woman, even though her mind is not so focused to watch hers that it won't do damage, if it killed, chayab mita. In other words, the Meiri is saying that women probably have less experience in watching oxen than men. And it's a rare case that a woman owns an ox. And she probably is not so good at watching it. And therefore, if the ox gets away and gores and kills, you might have thought, well, it doesn't mean it's a goring ox. It's not the ox's fault. It's just the woman just didn't know how to watch it. And so we'll teach her how to watch it, and that'll take care of the problem. So you could have thought that we're lenient towards the ox of a woman, because it was basically an out of the ordinary case that this happened. She just wasn't trained in watching her oxen.
So do
all. That's what you would have thought, mm-hmm. But the law is no.
No.
Shor Aisha is chayav.
Just is obligated.
Because all we're trying to figure out is the hava, meaning what you would have thought that made it necessary for Mishnah to say it's not so.
And what about the administrator? Happy
administrators, we didn't talk about that because the clock struck 10.
And we turned
into a pumpkin. Administrator turned into a pumpkin.
Right. So we'll talk about administrators next week. The truth is, there's not that much to talk about. We'll certainly get to the next Mishnah next time.
Were those oxes?